This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley. Today, we're remembering the musician who played piano on this and many other classic Motown sessions.
When I became of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, "Son, you're growing up now. Pretty soon you'll take a bride." And then she said, "Just because you become a young man now, there's still some things that you don't understand now. Before you ask some girl for a hand now, keep your freedom for as long as you can now. My mama told me, you better shop around.
Pianist Joe Hunter, one of the Motown session players featured in the documentary Standing in the Shadows of Motown, died last Friday in Detroit. He was 79. Hunter was the first artist signed to Motown when Berry Gordy founded the influential record label. Hunter also was Motown's first band leader and ended up winning 3 Grammys for his work with the Funk Brothers, the backing band that was such a key part of the Motown sound in the 1950s and 60s. They played on the recordings of some of the biggest soul pop stars of the 60s, such as the Supremes, the Temptations, the Four Tops, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, and Smokey Robinson, to name just a few. Now that Joe Hunter is dead, only 5 of the 13 Funk Brothers are still alive. In 2002, when the documentary was released, Terry Gross spoke with 2 of them, Joe Hunter, who joined Motown in 1958, and Jack Ashford, who plays vibes and tambourine, and joined the label in 1963. Before we get to Terry's interview with them, let's hear a song from 1963, one on which you can really hear what Joe Hunter's piano work meant to the Motown sound.
Joe Hunter, you got to Motown at the very beginning. What's the first session you remember playing on?
Well, I remember playing under Marvin Johnson's Come to Me. That was the first session that I played on. And later, all the way down to Shop Around, there was a lot of tunes in between that that never did. It was just stuck in the can. But there was another of the Contours. Do You Love Me was one of the more outstanding tunes that I thought would never be a hit that became a major hit for those Contours.
Why did you think it's a great recording? Why did you think it wouldn't be a hit?
Well, because I wasn't used to the kind of accentuations that were going on, the breaks, the dynamics and whatnot. And it just wasn't my speed, even though I did them. But it just wasn't my thing. I was more into the George Shearing area, you know, that kind of jazz music that I loved. And those little things, little idioms that never did occur to me, but it was Berry's idea, and his idea won over.
Do you remember what you played on Do You Love Me?
Oh, sure. A lot of little syncopations, upbeats, downbeats, beats that I'd never heard nobody emphasizing, you know.
Okay, well, let's hear the original recording of Do You Love Me? This is the Contours, an early Motown hit. My guest, Joe Hunter, on piano.
You broke my heart 'cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake 'em down. Watch me now. Hey. Work, work, work it out, baby.
Jack Ashford, let's talk about your music. You played vibes as a jazz musician before joining Motown, and also did a little work with the tambourine. How did you end up playing tambourine? I'll tell you, I was listening to some of the Motown hits, just listening for tambourine, and I found tambourine in a lot more places than I thought. There's so many tracks where you're kind of like playing on the same beat as the drums, and it's really effective, but I don't know I ever realized it before.
Well, when I first went there, they were limited to tracks in order to record on.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you can only do like four tracks at a time.
Yes. And so in order to get the instrument, see, when I started at Motown and started playing vibes, it was one thing, and they discovered that I could play tambourine.
Mm-hmm.
But Marvin Gaye really was interested in my tambourine playing. So when they would see me live with Marvin and see what I was doing with the tambourine, that made them very interested in that. So I would have to sit in the same booth as Benny Benjamin on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And I would use the same mic on the sock cymbal that he was using as the mic for the tambourine. So in order to balance it, since they couldn't mix it down once it was recorded that way, I had to move to and fro space, you know, from the microphone till they got a balance that they thought was acceptable. But of course, during the course of the song as it was going down, you know, I'm moving around, I'd get maybe a little closer or play a little harder, but they couldn't control that, and so whatever they ended up with is what they were stuck with. And so when they liked the feel of it, but it was kind of loud, if you remember correctly, the earlier Motown things, they said that they had to go with it. So they sent it overseas to England, and Sir Joseph Blackwood of EMI, who was going to distribute the Motown product over there, said that later on, he said that the tambourine was so high, he thought it was going to be a disaster. But when they started playing the Motown product over there, the tambourine was high, and then everybody across Europe started putting tambourine loud on their records the way we had ours. And so it made the product a success and welded my shoes to the Motown family.
So that's interesting. Had there been more separation or more tracks so that you could have been recorded and remixed,
right,
you know, on a separate track, the tambourine might not have ever been so prominent.
And might not have made it possible for me to be talking to you today.
Right. Can you, like, tap out some of the beats that you used on the tambourine?
Let me see.
That sounds complicated for tambourine.
Well, the tambourine would be easy, but controlling those cymbals on there so that they don't get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the tambourine is one thing, but controlling the cymbals is another ball game.
Now, Joe Hunter, let me get back to you. Joe Hunter is a keyboard player and was a member of the Funk Brothers, the Motown House Band. The records at Motown, there was a very elaborate process for producing records. There were, I think, weekly meetings that Motown had in which it was decided at this meeting which new song was going to be done by which group and who was going to produce it.
It wasn't always decided. They would have somebody in mind, some artist or some group, and it ended up being the song ended up going to another group. It's whoever sound the best on it. They might test two or three different artists on one band track, and you could say the...
So it would be like a competition.
Competition, that's right. Whoever did it best and whoever they decided, they had a woman up there, what's her name, Billie Jean?
Billie Jean Brown.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she was her...
Quality control.
And she had a good ear for music, and a lot of times she would pick, and they would say yes, oh yes. Then they also had counselors at high schools. They would go in testing records on, and the council would vote a certain way, and they went with that, too.
And when you were performing on a track, were you given, like, an arrangement to play, or did they just tell you to play what you thought would work?
Well, most of the time we were given a chord sheet, And sometimes they would tell us to put our own feelings in these chord sheets. They wouldn't have notations on there. And sometimes I would say that the band made up arrangements, really. By the time we get through adding what we had to Tamarine Man, maybe they might have somebody to sing some of the licks in the same groove and phrases that the drummer did, and so forth and so on, and build the song and arrangement around that. And then later on came in some good arrangers, no doubt about it, Paul Rising and Wade Marcus and a whole lot of them, Willie Shorter, a whole lot of good arrangers came in where they started arranging for horns and strings and everything. But the first was just a chord sheet type of thing.
Do you have a favorite track of the ones you played on, a favorite track for what you're playing?
Yeah, well, the Pride and Joy, I did what I wanted to do on that. We'll say I played the piano. I started the introduction off by myself. Later on, they added some drums and some bass to the introduction and made it like, you know, they could gimmick around and make it. But Pride and Joy was one of the tunes, the band track that I really did what I wanted to do. That's because, really, Marvin had played drums with me the night before, and I said, when we go in the studio again, I'm going to do my thing.
Well, why don't we hear Pride and Joy, the Marvin Gaye hit, and this is my guest, Joe Hunter, at the piano.
We'll continue our 2002 interview with Joe Hunter and Jack Ashford after a break. Joe Hunter died last week. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 2002 interview with Joe Hunter and Jack Ashford, two members of the Funk Brothers, the backing band behind so many unforgettable Motown hits. Joe Hunter died last Friday in Detroit. Motown founder Berry Gordy always kept close tabs on his session musicians to prevent their doing work for other labels. Joe Hunter told Terry about a time he got around that.
I wasn't ducking. I went over to Chicago, and I did a wrong thing. I took some of the Motown band. We cut Johnny Lee Hooker, Boom Boom Boom. And it was different places that I went with different people, you know. And actually, I didn't come back and tell him. I think it was some of the people, you know, that dog-eat-dog people that come back and say, hey, will you cash my check? And he says, oh, you've been over the VJs. Well, how did you get there? Well, Joe Hunter took us there. You know, that was somebody trying to get favors from Berry Gordy.
So how are you punished?
No, he made me stand up one time in a company meeting. He told me I was a company man. And he told everybody to concentrate and look at me. He says, he's taking our sound over to Chicago. I said, I'm not taking your town. They just play good money. Curtis Mayfield and all them guys over in Chicago put me on some commercials and whatnot. And Jerry Butler, you know. And it embarrassed me more. So he says, I'm going to forgive you this time, but don't do it no more. But I did it again.
So did you both feel that Motown wasn't giving you quite enough to demand the kind of exclusivity that they wanted?
I'm sorry, we're on the radio. No. No, but I'll go back to what I said. It was up to each individual that if he wanted to go out and explore, that was only right.
Right.
I mean, you know, you're doing what the talent was given to you.
You know, you both come from jazz backgrounds and then, you know, ended up playing on the Motown soul sessions. Did you like the recordings when you were doing them? I mean, did you, it wasn't necessarily what you were used to hearing or doing. Did you automatically have a taste for it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it. Listening back to what we had did, you know, I enjoyed it very much.
And Jack Ashford?
I found it difficult at first making that transition because I was still jazz influenced, and the simplicity that was required to work at Motown, I would forget it sometime, and I would just put extensions on chords and augment the chords and enhance the chords, and Earl Van Dyke would be sitting over there breaking his face up looking at me, you know, because we could all see one another, and I would be in the middle of the floor facing the grand piano. Earl would be shaking his head and looking up in the air like somebody shot him or something whenever I put a flat five on a chord or something. He said, oh, man, you know, what is that? So he said, no, keep it simple. And after I adjusted to that, you know, keeping it simple, it was cool, you know, but it was very simple. I mean, the chords were rudiments. There was nothing difficult with the chords until Ashford and Simpson started coming in there, and that required a different type of approach. And Wade Marcus, the arranger, these guys would... Even Paul, you know, they started to stretch out creatively with their chords, which is what really established the difficulty of people duplicating what we did, because there were great jazz backgrounds behind these records that were coming out, Reach Out and Ain't No Mountain High Enough and things like that. I mean, these required somebody with some skills to play, you know. And so, therefore, it was a challenge. So it grew into the challenge, and fortunately I was able to last long enough there to make that transition.
I'm wondering what it means to you, to each of you, to have this reunion movie and CD, Standing in the Shadows of Motown, in which you get to play with, you know, all the other surviving Motown musicians and do new versions of the old songs.
Yeah, it's... real great pleasure to do that. But like I said once before, we have a producer that wants some of the things originally just like they were. However, there are some things that we add to it when we add horns and strings and whatnot on certain tunes. But there are certain tunes that's got to be exactly all like they were. Else we got a complaint coming, like they were back there in the early 60s. Yep.
Jack Ashford, what does it mean to you to be reunited, you know, for this movie?
It was just a wonderful experience because these are the best musicians I've ever worked with in my life. And I miss them so much. You know, we shared a lot of wonderful things together during our time at Motown. You know, when you're making history, you don't know it because you're living it. In retrospect, when I look back on the things that happened, you know, had it not been for Motown, I would have never met Joe. And he's been such an addition to my life, and Benny and all those guys. And then to see these fellas again in 2000 in that basement, that little basement, we were all, well, after we got past the tears and everything, we had to wonder, would we still sound the same, you know? It was a lot of in question there. And after they kicked the first song off, I said, oh, my God, we still sound the same. So I said, well, we joined at the hip, so we better hope it pays off because we can't get rid of each other. So, but it worked, you know. And I think if you heard the CD and you remember back in the day and play those records, it sounds the same.
I want to thank you so much, both of you, for talking with us. Thank you.
Oh, we thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Having us.
Jack Ashford and Joe Hunter speaking with Terry Gross in 2002. They were part of the Funk Brothers, the Motown session band behind so many classic hits of the 1960s. Joe Hunter died last week in Detroit. He was 79.